Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. Welcome to the Hoban Minute.
Today I am joined by the Managing Director of the European Industrial Hemp Association, Lorenza Romanis. Lorenza, thank you for being here with us today.
With pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
And before we get into the many developments we've seen across the European Union in the last year, tell us where you are today and how the last 12 months of quarantine and this pandemic have treated you. How have you gotten by and spent your time during this last year?
So let's say that COVID allowed us to travel a lot less, do not travel at all. Therefore, we took advantage of these hours and times that we were spending home to build and to update most of our policies, position paper, namely THC, CBD. And we have been developing as well the textile sector with the fibers and the sheets. So we took advantage of this period to build the army and the weapon, let's say, to fight against the European Union institutions. The last year, Europe has changed a lot. I would say it's got into a positive turn in this moment in Europe, because thanks to the Cannavate court case that occurred last November, we finally got a clear approach towards hemp flower and the entirety of the hemp plant. That was something that we advocate for. Therefore, was quite positive. Last year as well, we got the United Nations positioning towards THC products, even if this does not directly have an impact on hemp, but still it's a major development that needs to be taken into consideration. When it comes to Europe, we were quite happy already at the beginning springtime, let's say, or in summertime, when the European Parliament adopted and voted positively to our amendment, where we have been asking to increase the THC level in the field, because probably you don't know, but Europe is still with the 0.2% of THC in the field, while we were asking for at least a 0.3%. And we are very happy because at the end, the European Parliament adopted this regulation, so now it's a matter of member states. Let's say that the only member state that is not so happy of increasing the level could be France. However, we have experienced a rapidly growing and changing landscape in France following the Cannavate court case. And I'm happy to inform you, it's a great news, but the French Mission d'Information, which basically is a working group composed by four ministries, have today adopted a draft law that probably might come into a real law at certain point, when they tend to legiferate and to give a clear and positive framework around hemp and all its derived products. And France seems to be ready to move up to 0.6 or even to 1% of THC in the field. So it's even better than what we have asked for. So we are very happy, but it's only one country. So what is legally binding is what EIA has been doing, meaning tableting an amendment and got positively voted by the parliament. So this still has to be confirmed at member state, because, you know, in Europe we are 27 member states, they need to agree. But France, it was the toughest one, even moved farther. So we are in a good shape to increase the THC and to align with US and Canada, even if we have Switzerland in the middle with 1%, which is quite funny. But Switzerland is not Europe.
Sure. Well, and you touched on something that we've heard a lot in the last year as we've been recording the Hoban Minute, which is taking advantage of this time. And certainly AHA's efforts have paid off, and they paid off in a major way, because we have seen just huge developments, as you mentioned, with this this THC standard. And I did want to talk about the importance of the flower, because I know it's something that that you and the entire group has been advocating for a long time. And can you tell us a little bit about the Hemp Manifesto that the group published, and just kind of talk about that piece of writing? What are some of the points that it touched on as it relates to the carbon advantages of industrial hemp, and how you think that that piece of writing may have helped shape some of this legislative effort in the European Union.
The manifesto was meant to put in one paper all our issues. So it's full of content, not very deep. We try to use quite a friendly approach because this document has been drafted and shaped to give a general overview about the potentiality of hemp to decision makers in Europe that are not aware of all our hemp problems and issues, because hemp is complex. So we have to use simple words to make people trust us. The manifesto has been followed by the Green Deal, was a major policy that has been announced by the President of the European Commission when she was elected this year. Basically, it's very easy. Europe wants to turn into green activity, green economies, green environment and agriculture and farming model. Therefore, we thought that the manifesto could have been reinforced by all the envy aspects that hemp has in it, I would say. And this was very well perceived because it was the right momentum. Speaking green today in Europe, it makes sense. And hemp is deeply green in all its form and process. So it was well heard. And I believe that we are surfing in an intelligent and very smart way, the green wave that is in Europe a major achievement, because by 2030 they want to be, I don't know which is the share of percentage of green, but it's a lot. So we want to reshape our industry and our farming model in Europe.
Yes, and that is something that we are seeing here in the United States as well, that this is a crop that can help us meet many of the goals that we're setting out to try to reach, including those UN sustainable development goals. Let's talk a little bit about the aligning of this THC percentage of plant material, 0.2 to 0.3%, bringing that up and how that aligns with the Farm Bill here in the United States. What does that mean for, let's say, cannabinoid, hemp-derived cannabinoid products flowing between the European Union and the United States? And of course, I'm thinking about this with the next point in mind, which is that we are quickly approaching the deadline for the FSA applications for CBD products.
Let's say that the THC in the field, if we have the same, it will smooth our trade, basically. So U.S. operators could pay less attention to decrease and decarboxylate the extract to fit this biomass and regulatory requirement from Europe. So when it comes to novel food, it's a different issue because novel food only refers to leaves and to flowers and to extract itself. When you get the label of a novel food, it's quite annoying because it means that it's a food that has not been consumed up to a significant degree before 1997 in our case. And it means that you need a pre-market authorization to put the product on the market and to sell this product. And this is quite long, complex, and very costly application. And this has become a mandatory requirement. However, our position, the association position, is that not all the extracts are novel. Only the enriched and isolated cannabinoid should be seen as a novel food because we were not able to isolate prior to 1999. And as well because isolate is like a powder, which is not a food, but as an ingredient to be added into a food. So we cannot speak about an isolate as a traditional food, while we believe that the low concentration product should still be marketed as traditional food without any novel food requirement. And we are advocating for that. When it comes to enriched and isolated cannabinoids, we are doing it on the behalf of our members, in this case more than 150 companies, the novel food application on their behalf. So we are doing all the paperwork and we are trying to secure this product. We will dramatically enforce, I would say, the chance to be fully validated because we will conduct a lot of toxicological studies that will put some lights on some gray zone when it comes to cannabinoids, namely reproductivity issues in men and especially liver toxicity. So we believe that we need some tests to be conducted in order to make the decision maker more comfortable and to derive finally correct and sound guidelines, because today when it comes to THC limits in food, and it's something that is concerned with full spectrum extract, we want to have higher value. We have to stick to the 1 microgram per kilo per body weight, which is a lot less than Switzerland, the US, Canada, Australia, New Zealand. We have 1 microgram Switzerland, they have 7. US, I believe that you have 13. And Australia, New Zealand, both got 6. So we have the toughest limits to respect, and we only believe that by investing a lot of money on the behalf of our member, we will invest 3 million of euro in conducting both studies on CBD, but without neglecting the even more problematic substance of hemp, which is THC. So we will conduct the biggest trial on human beings ever conducted on Earth. So we are quite proud, and it's quite expensive, 1.6 million of euros to test THC in clinics on 200 human beings.
Wow, that's incredible. And we know here in the United States the importance of that research, because that is the exact stage that our FDA is still at, trying to understand what these extracts are, what the impact is on the human body. So that is just fascinating and wonderful news about that study that is being conducted in Europe. Can you talk for a moment? I know we saw at the end of last year, or during the last half of 2020, there was some going back and forth between treating CBD as a narcotic or treating CBD as a novel food. And it seems that the European Commission ultimately did reverse course, decided they would not regulate CBD as a narcotic. But just walk us through a little bit where that push and pull came from.
Let's say that the path that we have followed was even worse and longer, in the sense that back in 1997, the European Commission had sent a letter to the European Industrial Hemp Association saying, go ahead, guys, it's not a novel food, therefore you can trade and build this sector. And then following this declaration, the catalog has changed, and it has become a novel food, and then from a novel food, it has become even a narcotic. We are very happy that last year, as you said, the European Commission reversed the situation by saying in its preliminary conclusion that at the end it's not a narcotic. Therefore, now what is going on is an exercise of alignment between the international decision when it comes to UN and Court of Justice, and we will align all these treaties with the so-called acquis communautaire, which is the set of rules that have built Europe.
I want to touch for a moment on hemp genetics, because here in the United States, as we are entering this 2021 growing season, and particularly for folks at more southern latitudes, many of the varieties that we have available in the U.S. are bred in Europe. And with this raising of the THC percentage, what do you think that will do for the hemp genetics that have been sitting dormant in European seed banks, maybe because they weren't in compliance with the existing regulations? What do you expect to see on the hemp genetics development side of things here in the next year or two?
As you know, the process in Europe is the following. First of all, you have to register a variety in your member state, and then the member state will communicate this name. When the variety is considered stable, it will be communicated to the European Commission and enter in the so-called European Catalogue of Varieties. In this moment, it can be planted. Of course, an increase up to 0.3 means a sparkling moment for research and development, for breeding techniques, etc. And I know that I have many companies in Europe that are already looking with interest due to this potential increase, because we know that there is a fixed ratio between the cannabinoids, especially between CBD and THC. So more THC on the field means a little bit more of cannabinoids. So indeed, as you said, the dormant variety that we have been using, or the one that we have, even if, I mean, they were not banned in Europe, because we have to underline that the 0.2-0.3%, it's only a matter of getting direct payment from Europe. It's not illegal. However, member states tend to interpret this threshold for direct payment as a narcotic threshold. But let's say that there are perspectives, and let's say that the Hungarian varieties, or the Polish varieties, or the Czech varieties that were on the market but have been banned because too high in THC, they will see a new renaissance.
Absolutely. And it's certainly something that we're excited about. Is there a lot of interest, do you think, in genetics that have been bred here in the United States and Europe, particularly for cannabinoid production? Or are you seeing mainly interest in European varieties for that matter?
We are interested in the varieties that allowed us to extract the highest number of cannabinoids with the less biomass. We are a market-driven industry. So we know that because you have 0.3 since a while, that your varieties might be very stable, have been tested a lot. Therefore, we look forward to cooperate and to see how they might grow over here.
We're certainly interested in that as well. And as I mentioned earlier, we are quickly approaching this deadline for CBD products to be registered with the Food Standards Agency. What insight would you share for any company that is pursuing that, maybe hasn't started to take the steps to do that yet? It seems that we're almost a month away, maybe a month and a half away from hitting that deadline. Any recommendations for folks out there listening who are considering that?
Be quick, be fast, because the deadline is at the end of the month, yes. However, we know that FSA, therefore UK authorities, prefer to receive all the documents largely in advance in order to have the time to assess and to validate it or not this application. And therefore, if somebody is interested in UK and wants to join the consortium that we have created, he is, of course, welcome. But again, we have to hurry up a little bit. The deadline is approaching, and FSA asks the consortium to show a list of companies that are behind the consortium. And therefore, if I cannot subscribe their name into the list, I will not communicate their name into the UK system. So let's say that they decrease dramatically their chance to be there. Or, of course, they can do their own novel food application, but our consortium started 2 years ago. It's not a one-day project, let's say. It's quite complicated and costly.
Absolutely. There's no reason to wait. Just like you said, move quickly if that's something that you're pursuing. While I have you, are there any thoughts that you'd like to share about the news we saw last week, the acquisition of GW Pharma? That was one of the biggest acquisitions we've seen in the global hemp industry. It certainly got a lot of people's attention here in the United States. What's the general feeling in Europe, if you will, on that acquisition?
Just let me add something, because indeed, if somebody's listening to us and wants to join the consortium, be aware that you are only quite in late for UK, while all the other 27 member states that we are offering the novel food application for, there is no such a deadline, so you can always join. When it comes to the big margin of these two companies from UK, and if I'm not wrong, Jazz Pharmaceuticals is from Ireland, honestly, I do not have any opinion on that, because, these two companies look at CBD as a medicine, because they are treating this product highly concentrated with different scope, I would say, while I'm more focused on food or food supplement. Therefore, I'm not an expert on that. I'm so sorry, but I have no idea how this could imply. I'm seeing these two words quite, yes, we touch the same plant, but any botanicals can be food supplement, or medicine. So we are using a different share of cannabinoids.
I completely understand, and it does. It just speaks to how many applications there are of this plant and all these separate industries that are created as a byproduct of that. Well, I want to ask you this. Seeing as that we may be approaching the light at the end of the tunnel, what are you most excited for here in the next 12 months? It looks like we may start getting some in-person events again. We've all done so many virtual events over the last year. But just for yourself, what are you most looking forward to as life begins to regain some sense of normalcy?
Let's see that if at the beginning I was quite happy of decreasing the travels, let's say that as soon as we are free again, I will certainly enjoy a couple of face-to-face meetings. That's all. And I'm sure that what I'm missing as well is I'm not seeing my members anymore because we were used to meet each other twice per year. So it's quite a pity that we cannot benefit from this moment any longer. So I'm looking forward to that. When it comes to hemp, what I'm looking forward for the next year, this year, is definitely the results of the toxicological studies. I'm really looking forward to have some good science from our side. In any case, it cannot be worse than what I get in Europe, 1 microgram. So I'm looking forward to a science-based approach when it comes to hemp and private talk.
Well, that's something that we're all excited about, and nothing beats those in-person events. I know that being with your members is just a world of difference, and we are anxiously awaiting that day. Lorenza, it has been such a pleasure. You are so knowledgeable and provided so much insight on all of these developments, these exciting updates across the European Union. Thank you so much for being a guest with us here on the Hoban Minute. And we'll check in with you soon because there's certainly a lot more still happening and a lot more that I'm sure we'll see shake loose over the next few months.
Thank you. Looking forward. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hoban Minute. Do you have any ideas for episode topics or guests? We would like to hear from you. Reach out to us at media@hoban.law and stay tuned for more on the Hoban Minute.